Hello there, listeners. You have in your ears right now the latest Culture Files single, and this time it's a rarity. It's a double A-side, featuring Catherine Young and Company with Sumood on one A-side, and first off on the other A-side, Dennis Harvey and Lars Levin with Celtic Utopia. But is it a genre? Following on the heels of Luke McManus's geographically circumscribing music doc, North Circular, another new documentary attempts to dive into and gather up armfuls of the energy in contemporary Irish music, sounds that often take trad in thundering or atmospheric new directions, with an eye to the tradition's political powers. All present and correct, then, in Celtic Utopia are familiar faces such as Roche, Jinx Lennon, the Mary Wallopers and Lancome's Ian Lynch. Striking about Celtic Utopia, however, is an attempt to frame the sounds within recent history. Yes, the Troubles, but perhaps even more resonantly, the world of the Magdalen Laundry. I spoke to the two co-directors of Celtic Utopia, Stockholm-based Dennis Harvey and Lars Levin, and I began by asking them about the business of co-directing.
Co-directing documentaries is maybe a bit more common in Sweden, or I certainly say would see it a bit more here than in Ireland. But I suppose, like, in its ideal form, and what's been really nice with this project is, like, me and Lars bring sort of different experiences, different life experiences and different perspectives on Ireland and Irish music to the project, you know. And so we can sort of share different responsibilities and learn from each other in different ways, I think, was sort of the process that we had.
Yeah, I think also the whole project was born very much out of the discussions we had about all this, about Irish history, about the music, and so it co-directing was kind of a natural continuation of that.
We were mainly on shoots together with our team, with our two cinematographers and sometimes with a researcher as well. And then there was some times where I'd be like back in Ireland a bit more than Lars, you know, because my family are there and things like that. So, but we broadly stayed together for all the shoots, and because we sort of had quite a pretty good rapport with the musicians, and would try to be in situations with them for, you know, for a bit more extended periods. Like we took like a long and quite wild trip with the Mary Wallopers, which started in Dublin, went to Limerick, and then ended up on Sleighhead out in Kirkcaldy in Kerry. So it was important that I think for us all to be together in those situations.
Yeah, I mean, they are kind of the lead artist in it. For people who don't know them, tell us a little bit about them.
So the Mary Wallopers are two brothers, Charles and Andrew Hendy from Dundalk. And they when we were filming with them, Sean McKenna was another balladeer from Dundalk was still in the band, but he's since gone on to focus on his own music. And then they have a group of musicians who they play with and record with. But they used to do, well, I think what was very interesting for us is that the Hendy brothers used to be in a group called TPM, which stands for Taxpayers' Money, and they had this amazing viral hit back in the day called All the Boys on the Dole.
Every day I'm on the same page, waiting for Dole, thinking about things that I have to pay. The woman in the window harassing me. Why can't you get a job and be like me? You know, I'm wishing that the window would break, because I want to smash in my fucking face.
Which they used to busk. They used to, like, play that song in Dundalk, busking. It was sort of a celebration of, like, I suppose slacker culture, and but it also had a really interesting and sort of sharp societal critique, and that was the sort of thing that me and Lars were interested in, that people coming from different forms of music, like they were doing hip hop, but then sort of returning to folk, and then doing interesting, strange things with folk music, and then also, you know, using folk as a way of commenting on and critiquing society.
I'm not gonna listen to your shite. Keep it up, you're looking for a fight. I don't have a job, but I have a soul. It's for the boys on the fast course, the boys on the door. All the boys on the fast course, all the boys on the door.
And it's been, that development has been going on very much for the same time as we made our documentary. I mean, they're latecomers to the scene, so we also seen the group develop and release their first album, and to become better learn more songs, become better musicians, everything like that.
I often wonder about a musical scene, whether it's sort of a Schrodinger's cat kind of situation that, like, until you observe it, it hasn't happened. And then you say, actually, all these artists are related to each other.
Yeah, and many of them may disagree, I think. They would say it's not a scene at all. It is the same with as when you try to name a genre and someone is playing in the genre, 9 times out of 10, they will be like, no, I'm not really, I don't play. I mean, we make our own music. It's our own creation. It's not like a part of this movement. That's not what it's about. But so I think it's very much from the observer's perspective. But then on the other hand, the people, all these people, almost all of them know each other and they meet up and they play together. So it's not only the perspective, it's not only like a marketing thing or not only the perspective of the viewer, I think.
I mean, also another thing I think that we sort of see it as and try to frame it as is like that they're friends. Like a lot of them are friends, you know, like in I mean, and especially in Dundalk, where the film really like kicks off. You know, we have the Mary Wallopers, we have Chi-Chi from Negro Impacto, and then we have Jinx Lennon, like who are all in Dundalk. And I mean, in many ways, Jinx is sort of the sort of founder of this weird, amazing folk scene that isn't really a scene. but he's been making this amazing, strange music for so long. And he was like the one who really encouraged the Hendies to sing in their own accents and write songs and put them out real quickly.
Tyrants of the open string, teach me your songs. The three chord boys are starting to come on. Don't bother, that's not the way to be. These Celtic tunings are a mystery to me. Well, there's Jerry on the fiddle. He's just back from Japan, because he's a real musician. He pockets for that man. And John with the coarse grey hair and the magic strings. Songs in their school, John, I hate it. Budgie nailing me off and stuff. Tyrants of the open string.
The Mary Wallopers were the ones who put us on to Negro Impacto, Chi-Chi and Lawrence. And like, you know, the Wallopers are doing folk and Negro Impacto are doing sort of neo soul, but they supported the Mary Wallopers invited Negro Impacto to support them when they did a tour of Ireland. So, and like, to us, that's interesting and worth thinking about. So whether or not it's a scene or whatever word we use, there's something interesting going on there and there's something supportive going on there.
And it goes further than that, I think. They also brought in like Ty and Alfie Mulligan. They were also brought in by the Mary Wallopers, and then they brought Dara from Lancome along on one of the trips. So it's really like they really know each other. Most of the people in the film do know each other, even if we didn't know that when we started out.
I was thinking at one stage, you know, it's a music documentary, but actually it's a documentary about a generation in Ireland. Like, it's about what all those people of that age have in common as much as people who just make music.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I suppose in many ways, like, I'm a similar age to a lot of them. I'm 34, and it is... We were really interested in doing a film about, like... as you say, about the music, but using that as a way in to look at this generation, like a broadly look at this a younger generation of people, mainly people who came of age sort of after the financial crash and the subsequent bailout of the banks, and like, you know, that I remember, like, yeah, in school, when I was thinking about going to university and stuff, like, I was encouraged to go to university, but the sort of understanding was that there'd be absolutely no jobs for us when we came out, and like I remember reading about the tax burden that we'd spend our whole lives paying off the interest of the loans that the government took on to bail out the banks, and a lot of the musicians in the film were sort of, yeah, coming of age or a little bit older than me at that time, and I think there was just a lot of like despair and desolation and I think completely rightful anger at the state and at the sort of status quo, and then I think like often in these horrible times and situations, amazing music and amazing culture can come out of those dark times, and I think that's what happened. Like, you know, you have Lancome and touring the world and the Mary Wallopers touring the world and so many other brilliant bands making stuff that and sometimes it's talked about as like an overnight success and things, but those people were making, that were sort of hopeless in Dublin or in Dundalk or wherever for years, using music as a way to survive and yeah, making amazing music out of the darkness.
One of the strange things, of course, is that these are the people who didn't leave. I mean, you're talking to us today from Stockholm and, you know, a great swathe of that generation disappeared. So there's something very interesting about the fact that these must be people who remained there despite the poor prospects.
Yeah, there's a lovely moment early in the film where the Charles and Andrew are giving us a tour of their house. And they were talking about when they were younger, they were like, oh, you know, we should move to London to make music and be in London. And then they were like, actually, that's real stupid. Like, and they're quite funny. They're like, yeah, well, number one, why would we give the Brits all of our lovely songs? But then they go on to say, like, actually, Dundalk is better than London. And it is, like, they're right. You know, they have it. There's such an amazing atmosphere in Dundalk. There's like, they're up, there's music every night, there's like, you have Jinx Lennon, there's like a real interesting skate scene, there's a real interesting music scene, you know, there's a really good like community action, there's been like a lot of anti-racist resistance when there's been far-right demonstrations there and things like that, so I completely get what they mean, that like, you know, I think we can do better than just leave when things get tough, and I say that as... as someone who left, like I was really, really inspired by the people in the film who didn't allow themselves to be sort of broken, maybe in a way that I was, and they didn't give up; they stayed around.
Ian Lynch from Lancome says at one point, and he says more interesting things in his life and indeed in your film, but it's complicated. But there's quite a complicated relationship with Ireland and with the new world that's emerging. And I mean, I don't know if, like, I don't know what we can say about that. I was looking at the new Lancome video, which for Ghost Town, and I was saying, this is really interesting because Lancome and, you know, several other people maybe from the non-scene have this kind of atmosphere that's very sort of blood and soil, and yet they have a kind of an inclusive politics maybe, and that's quite a complicated kind of philosophy or position to maintain.
Yeah, like that sort of progressive and inclusive nationalism is something we find really, really interesting and really, I think, fruitful. Because like we're living in a moment of increased nationalism all over the place, and it's usually exclusionary, and I think, yeah, if a sort of national culture can be progressive and inclusive and open up to newcomers and open up to you know, to like the positive protest or progressive protest, that's something very, very powerful, which I think we don't see in that many countries.
The sea, oh, the sea is the Grogal Machree. Long may it stay between England and me. Oh, it's a sure guarantee that some hour we'll be free. Oh, thank God we're surrounded by water. Oh, two foreign monarchs in battle did join, each seeing their heads on the side of a coin. If the Irish had sense, they'd drown both in the Boyne and partition throw into the water.
I think when we started making this film, we talked a lot about this Irish exception, that you had nationalism in a way that was actually inclusive.
Oh, thank God we're surrounded by water. Thank Christ we're surrounded by water.
At that time, there wasn't any like really strong extreme right movement, which sadly has changed during those 5 years. So I think that was actually one of the premises for the film, that where it came close to the core of the film, because it talks about unification. It talks about it's not a nationalistic film, far from, but it still dwells on these themes a lot. I've been listening to a lot of Irish music for a long time, even since I traveled. The first time I did a trip by my own when I was in my late teens to Ireland and hitchhiking around, and that, which made a big impression on me, of course, as trips things do in that at that age. But so I've been listening to a lot of Irish music, but I also been like romanticizing it. And I mean, you do. It's very obvious that the traditional music is so much closer to to mainstream culture in Ireland than in so many other places in the world. At that time, I just saw that and I found it amazing. But then, when you start to understand more about the whole about the history and how the nation building and how it was, how tradition was used in the nation building, and how it was both a protest but also became associated with an oppressive society, that made the thing so much more complex. And and that realization, I think, didn't come for me until we started working with this film. Until then, I loved Irish music, but as an outsider, as you like music, but you don't really understand the context of it.
I wonder what the word for this is. Orientalism referring to Ireland. I don't know what that's called. I say not really.
That's why I'm so happy to have Dennis, because every time when I'm talking about the film, it's like, okay, it's a film about music and Irish identity. Oh, and I have an Irish co-director as well, because there needs to be a balancing in it.
Something that we feel with the film is, and something we experienced while making the film, was that the opinions that the musicians hold and the way they deliver these opinions, like in really sort of like uncensored and sometimes sort of outrageous ways, that didn't really fly with Irish funders. There was people we were trying to work with or had offers to work with said they'd never show that, they'd never allow that to stay in. And because, I mean, I suppose, and then when you think about it, like it became a bit more clear for us over the years, was that like this scene or this sort of underground weird folk scene, these people are like they're not in the mainstream, and they're very critical of the state. And then if you go to a state body and seek funding for a film that's like that is highly critical of sort of these institutions of power, it's maybe a bit complicated, or people maybe don't really want to hear some of these things. And one thing we felt that the musician said to us from early on was that they were really happy to get to talk about Ireland in the way that we wanted them to talk about it, or we were approaching Ireland and Irish culture from a post-colonial perspective. And that wasn't really something they felt they had the opportunity to speak about that often.
Tell us a little bit about where the film's been going and what have you been doing with it? You've been traveling a little bit with it.
Yeah, we had the world premiere in Locarno in Switzerland, which is a very nice festival, and it's well acclaimed, and we actually won the documentary prize there, Semaine de la Critique, which was a great start for the film. And from that, we've been going to Chicago and to Warsaw, but we didn't go to Warsaw, but the film went there.
A lot of film festivals happen in October, which is a bit annoying, because it's really nice to get to go and you know, meet audiences and speak about the film. But I think it's shown in about 5 festivals in October, and obviously we wouldn't have missed the Irish premiere in Cork, at Cork International Film Festival this week. But yes, yeah, so like simultaneously it's playing in the UK, in London and Leeds, and also in the Netherlands. And then later in the year, it'll be in Sweden and even Australia. It is really sort of heartening to meet the audiences in Chicago a couple of weeks ago at the film festival there. People had such, like, it felt like people really felt the questions that we were raising, because it's obviously such a divided and pained time in the US that I think a lot of people can feel this, that we the film is sort of looking at, I suppose, another way of thinking about your national culture, and another way of thinking about your history, and trying to wrestle with the trauma of the history and get over it, or use it as a way to build solidarity. And I think that chimed with people in the States, and hopefully it'll chime with people around the world.
in industrial kind of sense of things, are the prospects for a documentary moving in interesting ways? Is that much better than it was when, say, Dennis, you made your first film? Like, what is that, the shape of getting it seen by people outside festivals?
Yeah, well, I mean, so thankfully we have theatrical distribution in Sweden, and we have an offer of theatrical distribution in Ireland, which it's almost finalized now. We're really keen to take that as well. And then we have, like, our sales agents were telling us they're talking with Japanese distributors, which would be amazing. They're theatrical distributors, and also in the Balkans, it's been sold already. So, I mean, it's sort of like a crisis period for cinema in general around the world, and especially documentary. It's sort of a strange time where the streaming giants have, like, disrupted traditional sort of distribution chains, and everything is a bit unclear right now. But there still are, like, Ireland is a really is a big cinema going country. I think it's one of the best attended in Europe.
I think the big change came earlier on. I think maybe like 15 years ago or something. I mean, there was a huge surge of documentaries, and documentaries made their way into the cinemas and into the ordinary festivals too. And it's hard to tell what's going to happen exactly right now. But I think, I mean, it's still documentaries are still they're doing well, I think, still.
But that time when it seemed like that your multiplex would have a documentary or a couple of documentaries along with the other blockbusters, that seemed to go away again. I think that time you're talking about, Lars.
That might happen. That might, sadly, yeah.
I think I suppose with a film like this and like with my other films as well, it feels like I don't know if this film would be. You never want to say never, but I don't know if it's really a multiplex film. I think often with these sort of documentaries where you're like, you know, it's maybe hopefully a bit more thought-provoking, and you're hoping people leave with questions in their mind and time to reflect. And places like, you know, art house cinemas and things like that, where there's often like director Q&As afterwards or like a special events alongside them, that sort of feels like that's where our forum is. And there's in cities and towns all over Ireland, there are these brilliant art house places that have really interesting, you know, that do curate film events like that.
And that is also why it's so nice to travel with a film, to be able to actually attend the screenings and talk with the audience afterwards, because with all documentaries, I think all good documentaries, there are so many questions, and the audience, there are so many things the audience want to know, and it doesn't end with the film.
Dennis Harvey and Lars Levin there, and their film Celtic Utopia has its Irish premiere at the Cork Film Festival this Saturday, 8th of November, at the Everyman at 5 p.m. Also on Saturday, this year's Light Moves Festival continues in Limerick with a show of Palestinian solidarity, including the Irish leg of the Palestinian Movement Festival created by Palestinian dance collective Stereo 48, as well as a revival of Sumud, a collaborative dance work from Catherine Young Dance, and the Palestinian dance company El Fanoun. Louis Scully went to meet Amir Sabra of Stereo 48, along with Catherine Young and dancers rehearsing in Fairview in Dublin.
My name is Catherine Young. I'm a choreographer and dancer, and today we are in Kush Games space, who've graciously given us a space to bring back a piece that we made in November 2023. We came together as Irish dancers in Ireland and Palestinian dancers to bring our two cultures together to make a piece in solidarity for Gaza. So we have a mix of Irish dancers, contemporary dancers, and some traditional Palestinian tabka dancers.
My name is Loul Amin. I'm from Palestine, and I'm currently based in Dublin. And I come from a Palestinian dance troupe called El Funoun. Yeah, El Funoun has always been working on preserving heritage and folkloric dance. Maybe like we can say that the tool they're using is dance and art and dance shows, but I would say that it's really building something in each and every dancer, and it's making them build strength and power. So yeah, it's a way to be free, and it's a way to resist.
My name is Amir Sabra. I am a dancer. Currently, I am based in Ireland, but I came from Palestine. In Palestine, there is wedding parties that usually happens in the street. It's an equivalent of a bachelor party or stag party. That's what they call it in Ireland. But this is only men party, and they do it in the street. And usually it's combined by a traditional singer. And in these parties, there was always traditional dance, tapki and other traditional dance forms. But where I came from, which is called Askar refugee camp, it's in the city of Nablus in the West Bank, there was a group of tapki dancers that at that time, it was 2009, something like this, YouTube was new, so a lot of hip-hop wave came. And they started, dabke usually happens in line, so they started to do hip-hop circles. And this is my earliest memory of one of the weddings in the camp that I saw a friend of mine, his name is Samer Samahne, he started doing popping, which is a form of hip-hop. And I started to follow them, because there was, like, you know, in the refugee camp, imagine 15,000 people living in 2 kilometer square and a party in the street, so everyone was involved. So every day there is a wedding. At that time, it was very common in summer that every day there's a party. So in those parties, I joined. It was my first memory of saying, yeah, this is something I wanted to do. Doing dabke gives me always a sense of pride because it has to do about my identity, who am I? And also because of the political situation in Palestine, dabke recently has a different meaning. It is about preserving culture. It was about also there is a constant threat to erase an identity. Then doing anything that insists on this identity have some sense of pride.
Usually performing with Al-Funun, it feels like this is a victory of all the days, all the years, all the hours and seconds and minutes that we put all together, all the emotions that we have traveled through with this project. To be on stage is the final, final result.
We wanted to create a contemporary dance festival in Palestine that can bring all Palestinians from different geographical background, but we couldn't do it in one place. Like, let's say, for example, I want to do it in Ramallah, which is in the West Bank, then a lot of dancers from Gaza or from the 48 territories or from the diaspora cannot come. So we had this idea of creating a festival that happens in different places, but at the same time. But because of the situation in 2023, we couldn't do it. We said, let's do a film festival that has the same idea, and we can perform it at the same time in different places.
I'm here today as part of Al-Funun dance troupe, and we're here to do a performance called Sumud. Sumud means steadfastness and resilience and the ability to go on and to have the power to, no matter what conditions or what is happening around you, to be able to do your things and follow your passions. The word Sumud really tells about the show in a holistic way, I would say.
With the Light Move Festival, we wanted to create something that has to do with the Irish-Palestinian cultures, how they come together. So we start the event with a 5-minute performance by the choreographer Catherine Young. The piece is performed by Irish and Palestinian dancers. So it's kind of really a celebration of this relationship between Ireland and Palestine, which has been strengthening through the past 2 years. So we start the event of a performance that celebrates the two cultures, and after that we will perform an hour of the film festival.
This project is a way to build connection not only between organizations but also between dancers, between the steps of dancers and between the languages of our bodies as dancers and people who carry cultures from different places in their bodies. It's not really easy to bring dancers from Palestine and to Ireland and build it from zero, but we use technology, of course. We tried to share our dances and videos. El Funun shared their dance with Catherine and with dancers, and we tried to learn it in sessions. And I think we're almost ready now because we've built it like separately, and now we're putting it together to make the show ready.
We've taken music from Palestine, translated it onto the Irish pipes. So we have an Uilleann piper, Tim Doyle, with us, and two singers, Roisin Al-Sharif and Deirdre Murphy. So there's both singing, percussion, and Uilleann pipes, but the music is actually Palestinian. So this coming together of their culture and our culture, and then together we dance the Palestinian dabke piece that they shared with us. So we wanted to use culture as a way and dancing as a way to come together in the body and show that we're standing with you, we're dancing with you.
Also, we see how much the body expression can say things that sometimes words cannot say, or sometimes words can be a little bit more controversial. Sometimes you just want to express. You don't want to say a statement. You want to say an argument. And dance give us that freedom sometimes to just express. We don't want to go into a big statement or argument. And it's something that I think also individuals need at sometimes.
Amir Sabra of the Palestinian Movement Film Festival, the Irish leg of which is happening at Dance Limerick on, would you credit it, this coming Saturday, November 8th. And also happening on this incredibly dense and auspicious Saturday is our live recordings of two culture file debates on the philosophy and practice of the Hare's Corner and on the PR machine that bugs might need. Things kick off at 1 p.m. in the National Botanic Gardens in Dublin. DublinBookFestival.com for the last of the tickets. And after that, Saturday, 6:30 p.m, RTE Lyric FM and via podcast, it's The Comfort Zone with myself and Colm Tobin digesting the documentary Beatles 64. What a weekend.